Right, and ignore that, and you will not hear it.
Okay.
Once we're actually on the air, you're not going to hear any of that. You'll just hear, as Stuart said, the music, and then I'll be talking with you. I'll introduce you, but I did want to set the stage about your study and talk about two things that do not have to do with the nutrition right up front, and one is the different signs, the heart disease warning signs for women and the tips for men.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll have plenty of time to go into the rest of it, which is the heart of it, and that's the nutritional side. Is that okay?
Sure, not a problem.
Okay. Now, in terms of the study, because that's the first thing I'm going to ask you, just tell me a little bit about it and how you conducted it.
Now, which study is that? I've done so many.
Okay. So the one that's mentioned here is 12-year study published in the Journal of American Heart Association, 1,000 patients.
Ah, okay. Yep, okay. And, okay. Well, what we did was we took over 1,000 patients and who had known coronary artery disease or risk factor for coronary artery disease, either by a stress test or angiograms, or who had had stents and heart attacks or coronary bypass. And they wanted to join a nutritional treatment of coronary artery disease. And typically, a person with heart disease, if you follow them for 5 years, at least 50% of them will have a new event, either a new stent, a new heart attack, a new bypass surgery, a new stroke. And that's with maximal medical therapy. But what we found at the end of 12 years, that really only about 1% of patients had a new event. And this was strictly with modifying people's diet and telling them to go to Costco or Trader Joe's or a health food store and buy a few supplements. And the important thing is we monitored how they were doing with blood tests that we sent off to labs in San Francisco, in Richmond, Virginia, and we could actually see whether people were following the program, what we needed to tweak, and they got a report card every 3 months. And so
okay.
We knew So that's how it works.
Good. Yeah, that's perfect. And sometimes I will interrupt you because I want to get so much in on this. But, yeah, I think it's important for people to understand the legitimacy of these studies. There's so much going on around people's heads. And then, as I said before that, I'm going to go into the special signs for women, which I don't think people know enough. The idea
true.
Of the gut for men. And
mm-hmm.
then I want to get into the nutritional information that you took from this study and all the other studies that you've done. Right? But
yeah.
Actually, you're a surgeon, am I right?
That's right.
So, one question for me, probably in the second segment, is we think about nutrition as preventive,
mm-hmm.
but also I'd like to talk about it as healing after somebody's had a heart attack, and whether it's the same protocol or it's a little bit different. Okay?
Okay.
All right,
that's
good.
Actually how I got into this.
Okay, well, there you go. Okay, it's the right question. All right,
yep.
Hold 1 second. Let me make sure that we're up, because I know we have to be quiet for a few seconds before the show starts. Yes, we are now. Okay, 13 seconds of silence.
Okay.
Don't see wrinkles. Well, When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
Yes, perhaps he's in denial. He sees hair on his head and not his shoulders, but we are not in denial. This is Adrian Berg, this is Generation Bold, and this is the Fountain of Truth about Aging. But it's also February, still February, believe it or not. For a short month, it's beginning to seem long. And February is Heart Healthy Month. And so we have been talking a lot about the use of the right exercises, stress reduction, other things that have to do with health. But you all know that the main event is health, heart, and nutrition. And today we have a true expert. We have Dr. Steve Gundry. And he's one. I asked him about his studies, and he said, which one? So you know right away that we have an expert with us. He is not only a heart surgeon, but he's also an expert in issues of feeding the heart. I'm going to call it feeding the heart. The best way to be heart healthy. And I promised that I was going to start with a question that really didn't have to do with nutrition with Dr. Gundry, and that is special signs for women. I think that the movie star way of projecting a heart attack is not actually what happens to most women, and we don't know the signs. So thank you for being with us today, Dr. Gundry.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
All right, so let's start with that. Women apparently get heart attacks or signs of heart attacks different from men. Can you explain that?
Well, yeah. Most people think of heart attacks, particularly in the movies, as sudden crushing chest pain and elephants sitting on your chest and pain in the arm or even pain in the jaw. And that's kind of a classic heart attack symptom. But women are actually very unique, and there's been a number of studies that suggest our advice to women are pretty much all wrong. One of the really interesting signs of heart disease in women is fatigue, just kind of being tired. And that's totally different than what men get. The other thing that is quite unique to women is a feeling of nausea, particularly after eating. And long story short, blood normally goes down to the intestines after you eat to help with digestion. And if the heart has some narrowings in the arteries, then and blood is going down to the intestines, the heart has to work harder. And so nausea is actually a sign of chest pain in women. And it's very typical for women to come in and say, you know, it's really interesting. Every time I eat, I get nausea, and I take some antacids, and that doesn't seem to help. So, I don't know what's going on. And that's so tiredness and this kind of feeling of a queasy stomach, particularly after eating, is very typical of women who have coronary artery disease.
So let's take a look. Let's unpack that for a minute before we talk about what to eat. Let's talk for a minute about how much to eat. What if people are eating the right thing, but they just tend to be overeating? Forget whether they're heavy or not. They just eat too much. Does that mean that they may be straining their heart, not just their gut?
Well, fascinatingly, it turns out that the timing of eating, not only how much you eat, probably has a huge amount to do with not only heart health but brain health. And as I mentioned, after you eat, a huge amount of blood flow goes down to your intestines. Believe it or not, digesting food is very hard work. And when you go to sleep, it turns out that the brain needs huge amounts of blood flow. We think of the brain as just kind of sleeping and not needing much blood flow. Now the brain gets most of its blood flow during sleep. And it's there to actually help clean out the debris of the brain. You might like to think of when you sleep, the brain goes through its dishwasher cycle.
Okay.
And what's been shown is that if you eat late into the evening, in fact, if you don't allow 4 hours to expire between your last meal and the time you go to sleep, that the brain actually never goes through a complete dishwashing cycle. So those of us who work in dementia, both myself and Dale Bredesen from the Buck Institute in San Francisco, really urge people that there should be a minimum of 4 hours between the last meal of the day and the time you go to sleep if you really want to protect your brain.
So now this
little
is
off
counterintuitive.
Subject, but important.
Yeah, you know, it's not off the subject because successful aging is one subject. It's one piece. And it's basically the way you look at your life in every aspect. We've had wonderful folks from the Buck Institute. I had the privilege of being down there a couple of years ago taking a look at worms and other experiments.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But we are longevitists. I mean, I'll lay it on the line to you. All of my listeners know that. We are not immortalists. We don't necessarily go for Aubrey de Grey, although he's been a guest too, that we can live forever and we're going to replace all our
mm-hmm.
parts. All we want
mm-hmm.
to do is live the best, highest functional life for as long as possible and with a little Prosecco thrown in once in a while. So
absolutely.
What you're telling, yeah, what you're telling us is perfect because we try to push the idea of holism and just a holistic look at our bodies. But some of the things you also tell us come as a surprise because we've all been eating oatmeal and whole grains and we think free-range chickens are the end of the day, even though we have to take a mortgage to buy them. But you say that life could be a little bit simpler than that. Tell us what your studies have found about good eating and good choices.
Well, yeah, and what I've found through the years, and I've been doing research on human eating for the last 17 years now, is that most of the choices that we've been told are healthy for us are, in fact, the things that are making us sick. And in several of my studies, what we showed was the more we eliminated whole grains from people, the more we eliminated beans and the nightshade family of vegetables, and the more we eliminated the squash families, things like cucumbers, zucchini, the healthier people got, and the more the parameters of health that we could measure in their blood work became better. And that's in really quite contradistinction to dietary advice. And all of that research I put in my new book, The Plant Paradox, which will be released in April on HarperCollins. And it really goes against what most people think. And paradoxically, some of the plants that we think are good for us are actually causing us harm.
Now, The Plant Paradox is a book that I can't wait to read. It's unusual that I even have an author on before the review copies. But I have to tell you, it'll be on Amazon. It'll be on all your bookstores. If you have been fine-tuning your life nutritionally, you haven't completed it if you don't read this. This is The Plant Paradox by Dr. Steve Gundry. And let me go on to this part of it, part of that paradox. When you did some studies of other cultures where people do have longevity, apparently you found that it was the vegetables that counted a lot more than the fruits, so maybe we have it backwards with these smoothies. What's going on there?
Yeah, absolutely. So long, long ago, my major at Yale University was human evolutionary biology, where I basically had a thesis that I had to defend that you could take a great ape, manipulate its food supply and its environment, and arrive at a human. And I got honors for my thesis. But basically what happens is, speaking of fruit, long ago, the only time we ever ate fruit was once a year in the summer. And even in the jungle, fruit ripens once a year. And interestingly enough, all great apes only gain weight during fruit season. And the reason that happens is that summer was right before the winter. And winter was a time of less food, whether it was a dry season, rainy season, or cold season. So we would use the sugars in fruit to store as fat for the winter. And then we would go
like
through
the bear
a
hibernates, perhaps.
Exactly.
And
we actually use,
right.
Yeah, we use the same metabolism as a bear. And one of the things I point out to my patients is that a bear doesn't eat for 5 months. And a bear does perfectly fine. And the amazing thing about the bear is that the bear does not use its muscle as fuel. It doesn't actually lose any protein during that 5 months. because to burn muscle as fuel would be stupid, because the bear would come out of the cave and wouldn't be able to hunt. So the bear strictly uses its fat stores to live. In fact,
I'm going to ask you to stop there, because I know that this is something that's going to lead us to a change in our thinking. And that's what the show is really all about. And we pull from all incredible experts, as we hear with Dr. Steve Gundry, the plant paradox. You're going to hear why things make a difference in your body when we return. Not just what to do. We all have this huge list. Don't eat that. Do eat that. I mean, my goodness. But what we're going to explain to you through the research of Dr. Gundry is why. If that makes a difference, that would be great. We'll be back in just a moment.
I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, so are they going to put commercials in here? We don't have to wait for that. And we can go right on to the next segment. So I'm going to start where I left off. A little bit about the book. Explain that what we're talking about, because everybody's got this enormous list. Eat that, don't eat that. But they don't know why. And if they don't know why, and for some people, you don't have to know why. You just do it. Some people just... they just need to know why, and that's what we're explaining here. And then we go back to that study and that paper that you did. So they'll get why vegetables and not gorging on the fruits. But even as though we're trained that that's your snack of choice, is fruit.
Yep.
It may not be the case. Okay, so the other thing I do want to ask you about, which because it saddens me, is the peanut. I love peanuts. It is my nut of choice. So I want to hear about that, okay?
Sure.
And then we'll go on to the issue of the gut. Stuart, we're okay now. All right, 10 seconds, then we start again.
Okay.
You may think that I'm full of it, that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, and we have been celebrating. We're celebrating Heart Healthy Month. It is very important. We've been doing many, many wonderful interviews with great experts in different areas of physicality, stress reduction, mindfulness meditation, you name it. But there's no question that the most important issue for heart health is your nutrition. So today we are speaking with the author of The Plant Paradox, soon to come out. We'll be on Amazon. It'll be in all the stores next month, April, I believe, Dr. Steve Gundry. But he is one of the shining lights in the area of heart surgery, heart research, and nutrition. And what I've tasked him with, basically, is not so much to say what to eat, what not to eat. It's in the book. And we all have our own list. But why? And one of the things that he does say is fruits could be de-emphasized and veggies emphasized. And he's telling you why. And so we've learned that, you know, Homo sapiens, bears, big mammals, gorillas, monkeys, they all show us that we're overeating, and we're probably overeating on sugars and fruits. So step right in now, Dr. Gundry, and give us the punchline on that one. Why is that so? Why have we been so kind of misled a little bit about what's best?
Well, we sell fruit. And unfortunately, when the eat five a day or eat seven a day campaign came out, eat your fruits and vegetables, people realized that we should really try to get people to eat their vegetables, but they didn't sell well. So if you put the word fruit first, everybody assumes that fruits are equal to vegetables, and they're not at all. In fact, some very interesting animal studies had one group of animals eat mostly fruits, and the other group of animals eat mostly vegetables. And the group of animals that were eating fruits had a very high incidence of obesity and diabetes, whereas the group of animals that ate mostly vegetables had exactly the opposite. They were lean and didn't develop diabetes. Now, why do we persist?
Dwell I just want to dwell on this lead for 1 minute, because I want to go back to something you said in the first segment, that when bears hibernate or other animals, they don't lose muscle, even if they're not eating. Now, one of the great things that we associate with aging is loss of muscle. Even if people are the right weight, they don't have muscle tone. Is that related in any way, that we're just eating wrong and therefore losing muscle? It's not just aging?
Yeah, we are eating wrong. And as I talk about in the plant paradox, the interesting thing is when we eat primarily grains or grain-based things like our healthy bowl of oatmeal, there are compounds in grains that are called lectins. That's not lecithin, that's not leptin, it's lectins, which are the plant defense system. And it turns out that certain lectins bind to the insulin receptors on muscles and prevent sugar from entering muscles, and the muscles basically atrophy and starve. And this is a plant defense system, because if you don't have a lot of muscle, you're not going to go walking. So what I evidence is that we lose muscle because we're eating the wrong things. Hello?
Yes. Oh, we had a little bit of a glitch there where I was not able to hear you.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know why that happened. So just hold 1 second. And I'm gonna find your.
We'll repeat it.
We're gonna start again. We'll be fine. You're not in any kind of a place where you're moving. You don't sound
it. Sitting down.
Yeah. I don't know what happened while I was listening to him. He cut out. Cut back in and then cut in again. I apologize for this, and we're gonna start again. Okay?
Not a problem.
Okay. Yes, we're ready. Don't worry.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and I am here with continuation of our Heart Healthy Month with Dr. Steve Gundry. And I think I'm just going to, flow right into this, because there's so much in his new book, The Plant Paradox, that you're going to be reading about the real truth about nutrition. We're talking to somebody who's done research on his own, independent research with thousands of folks, looked into other worlds where people have been known for their longevity. And so he's come up with really important protocols for research that prove what he's saying is so. And we're going to jump right in. One of the things you said before the break, Dr. Gundry, was that certain animals that are eating vegetables, are eating fruit once a year, are even hibernating, they don't end up with atrophied muscle. And so we associate atrophied muscle with aging. And it's inevitable. We can't do anything about it except maybe lift weights. But are you saying that there's a food relationship between atrophied muscle, which really not only feels bad, but looks awful, and what we could be eating?
Yeah, absolutely. There's abundant evidence in animal studies that there are compounds in primarily grains, but also in the nightshade family, that are called lectins, L-E-C-T-I-N-S, that actually bind to the insulin receptors on muscle cells. And insulin actually pumps sugar into muscle cells. And without insulin pumping sugar into muscle cells wither and die. And it's been shown experimentally that the more, for instance, healthy whole grains you eat, like that bowl of oatmeal every morning, the more your muscles atrophy. And if you just want to look at the old ancient Egyptian lithographs, these people were the first major grain eaters, and yet everyone was skinny. They all looked like marathon runners, And marathon runners are carb loaders, and quite frankly, they all look like cancer survivors because they have virtually no muscle mass. And this is not by accident. It's actually caused by the things people are eating.
Now, one of the things that, of course, you're known for is helping us determine what to eat in a very scientific way. And I know one of the things you talk about a lot is polyphenols from vegetables.
Yep.
Is that a good thing, a bad thing? What is it? Do we need it or should we shun it?
So polyphenols are plant compounds that were actually designed by the plant to resist sunburn, of all things. And polyphenols, actually, we now know, completely alter and train the bacteria that live in our gut, the microbiome. And polyphenols have an incredibly important outcome in human health because they affect the type of bacteria that live within us, and they affect the behavior of bacteria. And to the Cleveland Clinic's credit, a few years ago, as you know, Dr. Esselstyn from the Cleveland Clinic is a low-fat vegan, and they wanted to prove that animal protein was really bad for you. And they found that people who were eating animal protein had a chemical in their bloodstream called TMAO that damaged blood vessels. And they found that vegans didn't have this chemical. But when they challenged vegans with meat, of all things, they found that the vegan bacteria did not make TMAO. So they kind of left it at that, but to their credit, they said, well, you know, that's interesting. The people in the Mediterranean don't have very much heart disease, and yet they eat fish, which is a meat, and they eat some salami, which is a meat. What's going on there? So they found that it was the polyphenols in the olive oil and in the vegetables that, and in the red wine that people were drinking, that actually paralyzed the bacteria in their gut so that they couldn't make TMAO even if they were eating meat. Now, the bacteria were still alive. They were perfectly fine, but they just paralyzed the pathway to make that. So we're beginning to realize that it's the polyphenols in the foods we eat that have amazing impact on what we're allowed to eat and keep harm from occurring from some of the things we eat. It's fantastic research.
It is fantastic research. Now, of course, but we're all Westerners, so we want to pop a pill. So here's the question. Red wine, fantastic. Olive oil, fantastic. But are there supplements? Now, you're not the biggest fan of all kinds of supplements, but is it pure eating that you would recommend, or are there supplements that you can actually take, particularly people that have problems with their gut? We find that usually in the guys, but it can be very serious. I don't know. You tell me, vitamins,
well,
minerals, polyphenol pills.
Yeah, I used to be the biggest skeptic on supplements. I really thought they made expensive urine. But what I've found is that we could actually give people polyphenols, and we could show that their blood vessels became more flexible, that the inside of their blood vessels became less sticky, and then when we took these supplements away from people, that their blood vessels became stiff again, and the inside of their blood vessels became sticky. And I've published these results at the American Heart Association numerous times. So a few years ago, I set out to do polyphenol supplements of my own, and my most famous one is called Vital Reds. And it's a powder of polyphenols, and you just mix it in water, and it's available at Gundry MD. But I can tell you this from evolutionary research. Our ancestors used to eat, on average, 250 different plant species on a rotating basis. And all those plants were grown in 8 feet of loam soil. And if you really think eating an organic diet, you're going to get the polyphenols in 250 different plant species. I've got beautiful oceanfront property here in Palm Springs, California, for you. It can't be done.
I have to say two things that I didn't know. One, and I do say this, we do not have people on our show that pay for play, this is very important. I did not know that Dr. Gundry had created this polyphenol powder. I am thrilled to hear it. I'm going to buy it. But I just want you to know, because he's a man of incredible integrity, he's not on the show to tell you about that. I just really wanted to know how I could easily get this, and now I know. And I'm going to get it, because it's true. Even with the red wine, I've spoken to the fellows who did the original research on resveratrol, and they told me I'd have to have 1,000 glasses of red wine a day. So I take a pill.
Very true. Exactly.
It's very true.
Yep.
You can do all these things, but we're not in the jungle. We're not grazing 24 hours a day. And so we can't get enough. And I actually do believe in these supplements. It's important. And before we leave you, though, I want you to talk about the book for one more second. I know it isn't coming out until April. But other than Amazon, is there any other website that they should go to for the book?
You may think that I'm
they can go to BarnesandNoble.com, but they can also go to GundryMD.com, and they can learn all about how to pre-order it.
And we will do that. We'll be back, and it'll be on our website. Thank you so much.
Very good.
Okay, even though the music goes on, that's not a problem. They pat it down, you know, after hear what you said. So that was great. I actually didn't know that you have that. It's not in the press releases. So in addition, let me ask for my own self, in addition to that, the powder, with the vegetable powder, is there a whole array of different types of supplements that you have?
Yeah. For years, quite frankly, because I came out of academics, when I kind of started this portion of my career, I wanted to know what was going to happen if I asked people to take supplements. And I didn't want to be involved monetarily. It's a researcher thing. And so I would tell people to go to Costco or Trader Joe's. And when I started to see that, in fact, these things, I could measure their effect, I was actually incredibly impressed. And then people would start complaining to me that, you know, you got me running all over town and I've got 20, you know, bottles on my counter and my wife's yelling at me or my husband's yelling at me. Can't you make this easier? And women in particular hate swallowing pills. Guys can do handfuls at a time. About a year ago, I was approached by a company. I've been approached by companies all my career, put my name on things. And I said, no, not going to do it, not worth it. So this company said, look, we know your research. What if we gave you complete control of every formula and we'd make it? And you can control what goes in it. We won't tell you, you know, what we can do and what we can't do. We'll do it. And would you do it? And I said, you're serious, right? And they said, yeah, no, we're serious. So I finally jumped in. And so I have a complete line, and it's actually growing with each day. But the stuff has been wildly popular.
So I just want to tell you, I appreciate you doing that. That's why I brought it out. I was looking for a quick fix, too. So I know exactly what your patients meant. What I'm going to do, by the way, is I'm going on to my next guest. So I don't hang up. You have to. But you should know that we have a place in Palm Springs. So one day we'll have lunch. I can't wait to talk more about this. And I will do that after I've read the book. And, of course, as you know, it'll be on the website and so on. Right? Because you're right in my new home territory.
Oh, very good. It's a great town.
It's a great town, but I'm just, for me, I'm a newbie. I just got a place in Rancho Mirage, and I'm very excited.
Very good.
Take care, and thank you so much. This was wonderful. I wish we could talk more, but we have a certain amount of airtime. Okay?
We understand. Okay.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Right. All right.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hello.
Good morning.
Barbara? Hi, Barbara.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. We're not on the air. I just want to do a little say hello to you before we go on, okay?
Wonderful.
So I guess you know we're going to do two segments together.
Okay.
And Do you know how many minutes each one is? If not, I will find out and tell you right now.
I think he just said 8 and 11 or 11 and 8?
Yeah, 11 and 8. Okay. Very good. So I'm going to talk about your book, Middle Essence Manifesto, correct?
Right. It's like adolescence, but middle essence.
Middle Essence Manifesto, Igniting the Passion of Midlife. It's more than, as you say, according to the press release, it's not just a self-help book, but you're calling for a revolution, a new way of looking at this stage of your life. Am I right about that?
Correct. It is not a self. I'm currently working on a book to expand this, but people kept saying to me, when is the book coming out? And it's going to take a lot longer to write the longer book. So I wrote this manifesto because a manifesto is really a call for action, a call for change. And so that's exactly what this is.
Right. Now, you're a gerontologist?
Yes. I'm a gerontologist and I'm a leadership coach.
And are most of the client individuals or are they companies?
I work as an executive coach, so I work for people who typically are leading companies or entrepreneurs.
Right. So you're an executive coach.
Right. And I work, people hire me when they're in a personal transition as well.
Understood.
So
right, we're going to talk a little bit about that too. Now, of course, I'm going to ask you the usual questions, like what motivated you to write the book, and is this a revolution? We're not on, so I'm just going to explain.
Good.
My
no, this is helpful because this just came to me yesterday, and so I've been looking at your website and listening to a couple of things. But wonderful.
Yeah. Well, we're
know,
okay.
What you,
I'll try to make it fast. I'm a financial gerontologist. We look at people's money and finances from the point of view of longevity and how long we're going to be living. But this particular show is not about money. I used to do a lot of money shows. This is about successful aging, all right? And one of the things that we start by saying is that aging starts at about 30. And that we're not older longer, we're middle-aged longer. But the group that we're generally talking about is the group where you end. We're looking at people 65 plus, who we call the fungible generation. You don't know, between 45 and 75, it's possible that you can't age tell anybody. You don't know how old they really are. Depending on how they look, their attitude toward life, their health status, their wealth status, a lot of things. So the idea of generations is silly to us. We just say it's the fungible generation. But what I'm very interested with you is that you're hitting, believe it or not, a younger group, than, which is the 45 to 65, where what will be at 65 plus is dictated by our past. In other words, the people who are lit up for being 45 to 65, they're going to be lit up for being 65 to 85. The people who think it's all over by 40, they're going to be dead by 65. So you're dealing with a whole huge population that, to me, is like they're in elementary school. How good is your elementary school? And our elementary school is pretty terrible when we think all we're going to have is a midlife crisis. And it's all over by 40, and blah, blah, blah. So you're leading this revolution. That is so at all. And that's the context for me. If you're strong and healthy and fantastic between 45 and 65, you're going to be terrific at 66. So these are the things that I do want to bring out. To me, it's amazing that people feel that 40 or 45 is a low watermark. But it's true, and that's the research you've done. So I'm a big cheerleader for what you're doing, because without you, there's kind of no us in terms of a revolution against ageism after 65.
I love what you're saying, and I think it'll be a stimulating conversation. Part of the revolution, and I like your idea about, saying, why middle-essence manifesto, which implies a revolution, is I'm not thinking about a chronological number. That is an anachronism that we need to associate. Oh, how am I? Let me remember. How old am I? I ask people, I just did a program yesterday, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you are? We no longer live according to a number. It's the stage we're in. So it's in line with what you're saying, but my frame is a little bit different.
Right, and you stick to your frame, because I'm going to ask you, what is Middle Essence? I'm going to ask you what your motivation was in writing the book. I'm going to ask you what this revolution is all about. And let me relate it to my baby, which is successful aging. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And also I'm going to ask you whether it's hard to get the message across, whether people buy it, because we've been so indoctrinated that 40 is the time for crisis. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Okay? And is there anything else that you'd like me to bring out in a question?
Just how people can learn more, because if I'm going to help, my goal is to change our cultural understanding about aging. And so how it came to be that 65 is even a number we talk about.
Okay, good. And, of course, I'll mention the book. I'm sure it's on Amazon and in the bookstores. And if there's any website associated, I'll ask you. Okay?
Sure. Great.
Very good. All right, Stuart, we are ready for segment one.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. We are back again. And you know what? Funny thing. For a show on aging, we rarely have gerontologists on the show. But we have a leading gerontologist. She is also a leadership coach, an executive leadership coach. She also works with entrepreneurs, which means she's taking people who are already successful and bringing them to another level. We're speaking about Barbara Waxman. She's the author of a brand new book, and you'll get it in an instant when I tell you the name of the book, why I am so thrilled to interview her. And it's called The Middle Essence Manifesto, Igniting the Passion of Midlife. But she's saying, you know, this is not a how-to book. This is a book on revolution, because we're looking at a new life stage to redefine ages 45 to 65, which we kind of think are babies. So, Barbara, what motivated you to focus on that particular age group, and what's this revolution that you are talking about in terms of what we might have used to call middle-aged or middle life?
Right. Well, thanks for asking that great kind of introductory question to open up the whole new understanding I'm trying to promote, which is it is old school to think about a number as guiding us. And what prompted me to do this work and my background as a gerontologist and coach is over the past, we'll call it dozen years, as I've worked with clients, I've seen common themes. People who are successful, as they say, on the outside, say, I don't feel so successful on the inside. Or people will say to me, thinking they're the only ones, Barbara, I'm embarrassed to ask you for help on this because I'm not sure what I want to do when I grow up, and I'm already a grown-up. These are very common themes, and it's because we've, as a society, said that people are old. You've hit 40 and it's a midlife crisis. P.S., the research shows people don't have a crisis. People don't report having a crisis. It's the people around them who experience them standing up for themselves and changing that say, wait a minute, there must be a crisis. They're rocking the boat. People want to transition in a way and continue to grow, but we as a society haven't set them up for that. So that's kind of the reason that I saw these trends, the demographic shifts. There are 82 million Americans who are middle essence right now, and it's not a generation, it's a stage. It's a new life stage.
So let's talk about that life stage. Now, one of the things I love about the book is the age range, 45 to 65. We tend to, maybe because we think 100 is the only age that we could live to, and that is not unusual that people don't even make it to 100. Maybe we feel that being in your 40s is extremely different than being in your 50s, is extremely different than being in your 60s. But you call all of this middle essence. Does that have to do with the differences in attitude that you could have at 40 and 60 making you similar people? Or is it another reason, as a gerontologist, that you chose that particular age span to call middle essence?
Mm-hmm. I chose the age range, and actually it's fungible. It's a fungible, you mentioned to me on the conversation before we went on air, that around 45 to 75 is fungible. Middle essence is a stage. It's like adolescence. The demographic gift of the 21st century is that we now live long enough to go through adolescence, or a version of it, twice. And this time we have wisdom. Whether that shows up, you're an early bloomer in your 40s or later in your 60s, it's not about the number. It's about this life stage that we're going through. And what characterizes it is this sense that it's a transitional period, and it's marked by an increased desire to find or create greater meaning in one's life. It's often accompanied by physical, our bodies morph, kind of in like an adolescence, but this time in ways we are not so thrilled about. There are social, there are economic changes. It's really a turning point from which adults continue to develop and grow and have a shifting sense of ambition from the provider, perhaps, to what's more, what's next, to the contributor, from success to significance. So there's this internal shift that happens that leaves people feeling like they're not young, but they're not old. What are they? They're middle essence.
Let's talk about this idea, which I'm sure is in your terrific book, on middle essence, and that is significance. You know, this is the one of the great scourges of Western thinking, and I'm not going to leave the Eastern thinking off the hook either so much anymore, and that is that you're pretty much obsolete at 40, that you are insignificant. And I've had many women particularly who think a lot about this tell me that they feel invisible. And men, they sometimes just get marginalized at work, and this is a killer. So in terms of the revolution, is that kind of what you mean, for us to stop thinking of ourselves as just kind of dissipating? This is the beginning of the end, but it's the beginning of the beginning?
Absolutely, and it's already happening. I work with all kinds of groups. I work with men, I work with women, and I believe that ageism is going to be the next ism to fall. It is not in anyone's interest. Companies are started at greater rates by middle essence, more than younger folks. They're more successful when they have that wisdom factor that, let's face it, only time can offer. People have more resources, more social networks. So some of it is that we have aimed the arrow of ageism at ourselves, and we've got to stop doing that.
I always say it's really the only prejudice we hold against ourselves. And we're speaking with Barbara Waxman, author, leadership coach. I want to give you your plug because I want to get your website in here. She's a gerontologist, one of the few gerontologists that we have on our show about aging. How do you like that? She's the author of The Middle Essence. The Middle Essence Manifesto, Igniting the Passion of Midlife. Now, how can they get the book?
The book is available on Amazon.
And, of course, that's as easy as pie. And do you have a website that people could go
to? I sure do.
Go right ahead. Let us know.
It's BarbaraWaxman.com, BarbaraWaxman.com. And people can sign up for what I call blessedly infrequent newsletter, where I curate content. So it's really focused and interesting. We do a look at a book every month, which is interesting books, so people can get kind of the the brief overview and some insights into what's happening. I just wrote a piece called Is America Having a Midlife Crisis? And there's some other fun content on there, too.
So, Barbara Waxman and myself, we know each other only through this show. This is the first meeting. But I can tell you that we're already co-conspirators in this revolution, because her revolution is the revolution that you might know of best for the person who's heading at 40. And that's where we begin culturally to minimize ourselves, and the ageism begins to creep in. My revolution is 65 plus. But as I said to Barbara, if you're not in the right attitude frame and be living a significant life between age 45 and 65, the odds are I'm not going to be able to create a revolution of thriving after age 65. So this is, I call this elementary school, and high school is 65 plus. But you've got to do very well in elementary school. Now, let's go back to that. Do people think already that they're old at 40 and 45, even though we understand that longevity is pretty rampant? I mean, is it a hard sell to tell people that, gee, you're really young at 40 and 50?
Not at all. And I'm not saying they're young. I'm saying they're middle-essence. I think people look at midlife and they don't know what to do with it. It's kind of like a no man's land. And that's that sense that, wait a minute, am I young? Am I old? And by the way, people in their 60s, and I've had some people in their early 70s push back and say, all the qualifiers, and there's a quiz on the website, are you a middle-essence? All the qualifiers are felt by people sometimes who are chronologically 60s, 70s. So again, it's a stage we're in. And since it's born of this demographic shift, we're living longer, it hits people at different chronological times. So people aren't old at 40. We've got to let go. This is the revolution. We've got to let go of the notion that a number prescribes who we are and how we're supposed to show up. It's all about choice. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk in our next segment about your suggestions as an author, as a gerontologist, as a coach, on how we can make that shift in ourselves and make a choice that's really healthy, thriving, and exciting. We'll be back in just a minute. That's the one.
And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Okay, so now they put in commercials, but we don't have to wait for that. I want to delve into is, although the book is not a how-to book, I could already tell from your talking about the shifts that come in middle essence that you make it pretty clear. So I'd like to talk about that, your experience. You ticked off two of them. One is creating greater significance in your life. And different relationships. You talked about how you could mine your relationships more because you have more relationships. And I don't know what else, because they didn't send me the book.
I'm sorry. I thought they sent you the PDF. In any case, I have kind of a three-prong.
Go ahead. I want to get to that because I want them to really see how much you're covering here. I could tell by the press release, but I couldn't tell by the chapters of the book. So go ahead.
So, Ryan, you want me to tell you while we're off air?
Oh, off air, just what the three prongs are without going into them. Then we're going to go deeply into them on air.
There are three concentric circles: energy, meaning, and engagement. And in the middle of where they combine is what I call the middle essence factor. It's that secret sauce.
Great.
I can talk about
exactly
how to get there.
Perfect. All right, then the segue was perfect. Okay. We're good, Stu. We're ready. Okay. 8 minutes, last segment.
Okay.
Now we have 10 seconds of quiet, and we're on.
Okay.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me. am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about aging. And we have with us a gerontologist, also author, also executive and entrepreneur leadership coach. Her name is Barbara Waxman, and she's the author of The Middle Essence Manifesto, Igniting the Passion of Midlife. You can find a lot of information out just on her name, barbarawaxman.com. Of course, you'll go to Amazon, you'll be able to get her ebook, The Middle Essence Manifesto. There was a promise that we made to you before the end of the last segment, which was that we were going to task Barbara with explaining to us her 3 points of how we can move from kind of this no man's land of what we used to call middle age, what she calls middle essence, to a very firm view of who we could be in these really important years and life stage. So, Barbara, what's your construct in the book? It's fascinating.
I like to boil things down to kind of their simplest form so we can really put them to work. And if you can imagine, we're all cooks in the kitchen, and we want to stir up the sauce with our own spices, our own secret parts of the recipe. And where these three factors I'm going to mention come together, create that, what I call the middle essence factor, secret sauce, starts foundationally with your energy, which means your vitality, which in middle essence, we still have vitality. What a lot of people get wrong is they think that going to the gym, being on crazy, you know, health kick diets is for the young. It's not. The older we get, the more we need to learn how to cultivate our energy so that we have the foundation to show up in the way that we want. And that's regardless of age. It increases over time. And if people email me, Barbara@BarbaraWaxman.com, I'm happy to share a 25-question, easy-to-answer, thriving quiz, and they get a score. Once you know that energy component, you're ready to shift to an understanding of meaning. What provides the wind beneath your wings? What gets you out of bed in the morning? And simply put, people look for their big P purpose. What's my life's purpose? And sometimes it's right there. And other times, that focus on purpose is an obsession that stops people in their tracks. So I talk about, and actually a friend of mine, Lori, introduced this idea to me, little P purpose. How can we do something small every day to make the world a better place and to make us feel like we're a part of it? So we start with vitality and energy, we shift into meaning, and then we put those two together to look at our leadership for ourselves, our families, because we're the leaders of our families, our communities, and the world, and put it all to work. That's the middle essence factor.
And you know, if you were listening carefully to these three, you might have two reactions. One is, why isn't this natural? Why aren't we already doing this? Why do we need to have a coach in Barbara Waxman? Well, we do. Why? Because I think we're programmed to think that this is a time of lower energy, of less contribution, less purpose and meaning, and people do get depressed. They do feel that there's nothing in life, or they took a wrong turn, and they can't, they're too old. It's over. And we see this all the time. And the second one reaction could be anger, which is my reaction. I just saw something, Barbara, and I think it was Newsweek. I don't want to give them a bad name. I don't remember. It said 40 under 40. In other words, the 40 most important people in the United States or in a particular industry, they do this all the time, under 40. The 30 under 30. My daughter was in one. 20 under 20. I never saw 50 under 50. I never saw 60 under 60. What happened? Why do we stop appreciating the success of people after a certain age? So I go back to you now, Barbara, and I ask you the question that I asked during the break. You said that we're feeling it. It's not so hard to create this revolution. You feel people are hungry for this new way of thinking?
Absolutely. Ageism and self-limiting ways of thinking isn't helpful to anybody. It's not helpful to the 20 under 20, to the 30 under 30, to the 50 over 50. It's not productive. It's not good for business. People, there's a brain drain that happens when people with experience and wisdom leave, and the numbers prove that out. People are hungry for this because the creativity that you can bring born of experience also gets lost in the shuffle. So I believe that people are not only ready for this, but people are changing. So when you say you're angry, well, you're doing something about it. You're having people on your show who are introducing new ways to approach this. There may be a budding entrepreneur of any age who's listening, who's saying, I'm going to create a list of 50 under or over 50. It's all ripe for the taking. We just need to go for it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I will tell everyone, and I'll tell you, Barbara, I'm having the privilege of speaking in Las Vegas. I know about that. I love Vegas. I like it for itself. I don't always like to go there to work. But I'm going there to work. The EFA, which is Environments for Aging Conference, is on. It's a big week conference. And I'm going to be talking about something called Beyond the Physical, how to create facilities and even homes for people over 65 who really do want to thrive. And that's going to include contribution. The fact that they have to have the opportunity to contribute, not just be contributed to. And I'm going to mention your book, because honestly, I feel that this idea of significance, energy, self-care that you promulgate needs to start earlier than we're beginning at a place like Environments for Aging. It's not that it's too late. We can light ourselves up at any age. But boy, wouldn't it be nice if we had this great middle essence and moved into the next stage of life much more prepared to be contributing no matter how old we get. I think that's really important, and I think that you're part of this revolution that I didn't think of, because I always thought later in life. But boy, wouldn't that be great. So, Barbara, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to tell everybody again, it's barbarawaxman.com. It's the Middle Essence Manifesto, Igniting the Passion of Midlife. And we will have her email if she gives us permission so that you can get the 25 questions from that right in front of our wonderful website. And meanwhile, kids, get out there and make it happen.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, Patricia. And don't worry about the music, because they pat it down so they can hear everything we just finished with. Okay?
Great. Wonderful.
So I thought it was
Thanks
a great
so
interview. And I'm going to have an opportunity before I go to download this. But let me just say this. I just want to look at what they sent me here. They said it was an e-book. They gave me the name. And they said it's downloadable as a PDF.
I mean, you can get the actual book on Amazon, but since we just wanted to make it easy, so we sent it as a PDF.
Okay, but I see what happened. They didn't give me a link to the PDF. They only, because I don't prepare these. Usually it goes to the producer and hands me the book, you know, a day or two before.
Right.
So we get a link to the PDF. So if you're going to be around and doing a lot of, interviews, that would be better for the host instead of sending them to Amazon, and they have to then download.
No, I think they attached the actual PDF.
They attached the actual
PDF. But and I didn't do it, so I apologize if it didn't come to you correctly.
Maybe it didn't happen. No problem. I'll go back and I'll look. If it's there,
and I'll confirm, and if not, we'll resend it. To you.
Yeah, because I think that this is something I could weave in. It's funny. It's like everything else. There are silos. And even in gerontology, areas of gerontology, as you know best, there are these silos. So you tend to start at a certain age, and you forget that these people were people before they got to that age. And
right.
You're really covering the waterfront for us. I love it. So,
well, thank you.
You
know,
New
it's
York?
Interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me?
I was saying, are you in New York or where are you? Or
I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco, okay. Yes, go
so,
ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's nice and early here.
Yes,
wow. It's interesting because I'm a gerontologist, so I've been in the aging field for years. But what I'm really doing is creating a new area because, as you know, gerontology thinks about people 55 or 65 plus, and I'm saying it's not about that. And the reason I chose middle essence, I didn't make the word up, it just hasn't been used really, is it's like adolescence. Once you say to someone, oh, you have an adolescence, or you remember when you were an adolescent, people immediately get it, that it's a stage, that it's challenging, and that it leads to the formation of who you're going to be. And it's the same thing.
Absolutely.
We just go through it twice.
It's just fascinating. All right. I really thought it was a great interview, great content.
Oh, good.
I'll look deeper into it myself. And thank you. I can't hang up. You have to hang up because of the way the recording goes.
Okay.
So I'm going to stay on for a second.
So.
You can hang up.
All
and
right.
We will be more in touch. And
all
thank
right.
You for getting
Wonderful.
Up so early.
Oh, happy to do it. All right. Thanks so
thank
much.
You. Right. Right.
Bye.
You can hang up, Ace.